over the weekend in Austin, Texas.
Mr. Guerin makes a point of order that a quorum is not present. Based on the tally sheet furnished by the voting clerk, a quorum is apparently not present. The point of order is well taken and sustained.
Democrats walked out of the House chambers at the state capitol just before midnight on Sunday in a coordinated last-ditch attempt to block a contentious and restrictive voting bill. Texas Governor Greg Abbott, not pleased, he says he'll order lawmakers back to Austin in the fall for a special session. He's also threatened to withhold paychecks from state lawmakers.
This latest situation is an exclamation point to what has been one of the most remarkable and conservative legislative sessions in Texas history. It's a state that has generally taken a hands-off approach to legislating the lives of Texans. Two major bills were passed this session. One will allow people to carry a handgun without a permit. The other is one of the country's most restrictive bans on abortions. So what does all of this mean, and what does it signal for the future of Texas and more broadly the country? With us to talk about all of this is Abby Livingston. She is the Texas Tribune's Washington Bureau Chief, and she joins us now. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yes, well, let's start with this walkout. As Representative Nicole Collier put it, it was the last tool in the Democrats' toolbox. But it's really just a stopgap. This bill will be taken up in a special session in a few months, and it's almost guaranteed to pass. What's next for the Democrats? What are some other options that they have at this point?
Well, they don't have many. And this is a consequence of the 2020 elections. There was, a great deal of optimism that they would be able to take the state house chamber and they would have actually had the majority. But, they had disappointing results down ballot. Joe Biden narrowed the gap in Texas to 6 points, which was the closest a presidential's been in a generation. But it appears a lot of Texans voted for Joe Biden and then switched over to the Republican side. Mm-hmm. And so this is a consequence of that. And so I think there's some watching and waiting, but it's not without benefit. I mean, I do think there's probably a fundraising advantage and maybe a little bit of excitement. The Texas Democratic world has been a little bit beaten down since November. And so I think this is the first time I've witnessed them having a bounce in their step and some confidence.
Well, let's bring in Patrick Svitek, a colleague of yours with the Texas Tribune. Patrick is a political correspondent. Patrick, this legislature is described as the most conservative assembly in the state in over 30 years. To Abby's point, this is a state where in 2019, Democrat Beto O'Rourke got within 2 percentage points of beating incumbent Republican Senator Ted Cruz. Many thought, as Abby said, that the state would flip to Joe Biden in last year's election. If Texas has been moving slowly towards the blue, as some political strategists have suggested, how did this conservative body actually win?
Well, I mean, as Abby pointed out, the November election was a huge disappointment to Democrats in Texas. They not only did, former President Trump carry the state, but the Democrats failed to take the state house majority here, which is probably the most consequential outcome as far as this legislative session is concerned. And so, heading into this.
I think I might have lost Patrick. Abby, I want to also talk with you about something else, this shift in who Texans are sending to Congress. The state will gain 2 seats in Congress per the census results, sending 38 members to Washington. Can you talk a little bit more about that shift?
Sure. So we were actually expecting maybe another seat. The question was 3 or 4, but we actually only got 2. We don't have the maps yet. That will be decided in a special session in the fall. So there will be a special session no matter what. What we've seen over the last decade was Democrats really grew their vote in the suburbs and the cities. And the question ahead for lawmakers is, are the Republicans who control the state legislature is, are they going to be super aggressive in a redistricting map, see how many Republicans they can get in the here and now, or do they, take it in a strategically conservative way and just go for incumbent protection and draw lines that'll last through this decade if the demographic changes we expect to take hold? But these two mm-hmm. additional seats also up our ante with the Electoral College vote. So now instead of 36 votes that Texas will put in the presidential, it's 38. So that just underscores how important this state is going forward.
Next year, all state representatives and senators will be up for re-election, and we'll get to talking about that more in a moment. But that means all these legislators are theoretically keyed into the mood of their constituents. I'm bringing this up because, at least in the case of permitless carry, a majority of Texans polled said they opposed that measure. Local, state, and police were actually against this as well. Here's Randy Johnston, a gun owner in Texas, interviewed on KTVT.
I don't want to look at every single person I come across as a potential threat. That's not the world I want to live in.
Abby, is there a disconnect between what this legislature has passed and what the majority of Texans actually want?
Well, this is a consequence of the way the politics are structured and turnout. And Republicans in the state legislature, most of them are in safe seats, and most of them exceeded expectations last November. So they're afraid of their base and their primary. And this has been the holy grail of conservative legislation for as long as I've been covering Texas. And so of the people they want to please, they're completely connected. And this is just another symptom of, you need to turn out to vote and how you feel when you have a position on the state of things.
Can you talk a little bit more about how important it is, this redrawing of political maps? How much can Republicans actually change those maps? That's going before this special session for legislators in the fall.
Well, at least on the federal level, they have more power than they've had in decades. And that is because Texas is a state that in the past had to qualify under something called preclearance, which it's states with a racist history have to send to the Department of Justice their map to make sure it's not disenfranchising people of color. That went away in 2013 with a Supreme Court ruling. And so now Republicans have more power than they've had in a really long time, and they can really take the axe to some of these districts. I think the question is, again, how aggressive do they want to be? And I watched some of the freshmen who maybe didn't win a whole lot in November, but they are acting like they are in safe seats. And so, I can't read too much into it, just speculate. But, I do wonder if they have gotten a signal that their district is going to get easier. But again, going back to back in 2006, when Democrats really, when they took back the House, Ohio and Pennsylvania utterly collapsed for Republicans. And that's because the lines drawn in 2000 were just too aggressive. And that leaves many incumbents vulnerable in a wave. And so, if there's a bad year and Republicans have been too aggressive, and say in 2026, 2028, a wave comes through, the question is, are they thinking about that, and do they want to protect their incumbents?
Let's bring back in Patrick Svitek. He's back with us. As I mentioned, Patrick, a round of elections is also happening next year for Texas representatives and most statewide offices, including the governorship. And all state Senate and House races as well. That is a lot. If the voting rights bill passes later and districts are redrawn, what impacts do you think all of this will have on those elections?
Sure. Well, Democrats obviously believe that this voting bill, Senate Bill 7, would have a suppressive effect on turnout in those elections, either in 22 or beyond. And so that's, to them, that's the immediate danger. Redistricting, Republicans still entirely control that process in Texas. And so they're going to be in a position to draw districts that continue to be more favorable to them. And so, all that could combine to make it a pretty favorable election cycle for Republicans in Texas. Again, combined with that national environment where history tells us that, the first midterm of a new president, the party out of power, it tends to do pretty well. So Republicans right now, the incentive, whereas like in the 2020 election, the incentive structure for Republicans was all around the general election because they're anticipating a real challenge there. The incentive structure this time for Republicans is all around the primary, looking ahead to 2022.
Before I let both of you go, what races are you specifically watching in the elections next year? I'll start with you, Patrick.
Yeah, it's hard to make some to flag any particular races at the legislative and congressional level because it's still waiting for those district lines. But statewide, I think one of the marquee races will be the primary battle between George P. Bush, who's the current land commissioner, and the Attorney General Tim Paxton, who is going to get a challenge more likely than not tonight from George P. Bush. And so that'll be a fascinating race to watch. Ben Paxton, the attorney general, has had some personal legal troubles for years. And also, it'll be an interesting race to watch because former President Trump has already said that he plans to make an endorsement in the race and make it pretty soon. And so that will be a fascinating dynamic, given that the Bush family has a complicated history with Trump, to put it lightly. And also, Ken Paxton has been a very pro-Trump attorney general.
That's Patrick Svitek, political correspondent at the Texas Tribune, and Abby Livingston, the Texas Tribune's Washington Bureau Chief. Thank you both.
Thanks so much for having us.